along to this week's Devil in the Detail podcast. I'm Rob Parkinson, and I'm here talking all things Salford Devils. Joining the show this week, as ever, we've got Paul Whiteside, fresh from keeping Britain warm. Bit of a cold patch this week, been busy?
Yeah, always busy, mate, always busy. But it's good to get on the show 2 weeks running, though. I've not done too bad, but yeah, it has been a busy week up to now. I'm off on Friday this week. It's my wedding anniversary, so Ellen thinks I've booked the day off for that, but I haven't, so I'm good to say Ellen's on Friday night. So I'm not in a rush, but I'm sure I'll be a treat to a coffee or something in the daytime. But yeah, all good, mate, thank you.
Thought you'd be treating it to a day out in St. Helens. And oh, while I'm here, oh, Salford are playing now. Who'd have thought that?
I did that a few years ago. I went to that Knowles Safari Park, said to her on the way, and went, I'm sure the reserves are playing at St. Helens. I went, what's the reserves at Saints? But no, it was a birthday weekend as well. So I know it was Parky's missus' birthday on the same day, wasn't it? So we both had to look after her at the weekend, didn't we, mate?
Yes, yeah. It's been a busy few weeks. Funnily enough, it was my wedding anniversary last week. And little story there, the night of our first proper date, we were at St. Helens away. And I got accused of ignoring her. I was just playing it cool, you know what it's like. I went up for a cheeseburger at half time and walked past her and didn't let on, apparently. Could have all ended there, couldn't it?
Yeah.
And that was 23 years ago, so can't have been that bad, can I?
No. First date, St. Helens away. Surprised you didn't dump me on the spot, to be fair.
It wasn't actually part of the date. She was already going to the match and I was going.
Right.
We did go out after that. We did go out and have a nice night out, by the way. But not in St. Helens, because that's probably not achievable.
First Salford game I took my wife to was on a fun bus to Hull. We got to be 86. And it was one of them where half 8 in the morning, you're all queuing up to get on the bus and everyone's clicking the top of the cans. And she was like, whoa. She didn't know what, you know, let herself in for, to be fair, but should have known then, really, thinking about it, Parker.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, them fun buses were a bit legendary, weren't they, really?
Yeah.
It was a full day. But the thing was, at the time, I don't think the result really mattered to most of them. It was just a case of, we'll drink through this, it'll be fine. But yeah, I actually remember that game as well. It was, yeah, torture, really was. But she's still with you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she kind of disliked it too much.
No. No, it's, at least you start at the very, very bottom,
yeah,
all the way. Everything's up there, innit, Paul?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, my missus really into rugby league or out, so I think she's been at Salford a few times. I remember one of the first dates we had, we went to, it was at the Willows, the Variety Centre. I think it was the Player of the Year awards. It was 2010, I think it was, when Daniel Olsen seemed to win everything. Mm. He won all the awards and that. And she was quite impressed. We had like a nice bit of steak and that, and it was all right. It was good. But I think the first game she went to was the final one at the Willows, and then she only went to that because it was one of them things, wasn't it, where everybody had to go and that. But no, she's not really been back since. Been to the odd game and that when we've had no one to mind the kids, but nah, she's not into rugby league. Neither is my youngest daughter. She can't stand it. She absolutely hates it. So it's peculiar. And then my other daughter's absolutely addicted to it. So I don't know. Women.
Talking about good days, we had a great day, didn't we? The Hull KR game. One of our listeners, Mark Hay, treated us, didn't he, Paul, to a day in the Platinum Lounge. Great hospitality. Great day. Really enjoyed it. Big thanks for Mark for everything he did for us on the day. Tremendous.
Oh, it was a brilliant day, Rob. I really, really enjoyed it. Mark's a lovely guy. We've been out with him before, haven't we, a few years ago when he came over to England. And he's always kept in touch with us. And he's always been a massive supporter of the podcast as well, hasn't he? And spread our name far and wide in Australia. He's always been really supportive. And he listens every week and sends us nice comments. And just a genuinely lovely fella. And it was great to see him and his dad, wasn't it, on Saturday. It was his dad's 79th birthday as well. And it was great. I really, really enjoyed it. I think him and his dad are a sort of similar age to me. And my dad's 23, 24 years different. So he was saying to me, it's like, you can see like that we've got things in common and that, and a love for Salford and that. And I think it means a lot to him. So yeah, I really enjoyed it, Rob. It was great to be with you and Parky as well. I think it was just nice to be able to watch a game together because we don't always get that, do we? It was nice and relaxed. And no, it was brilliant. I'd love to go in there again. It's really good.
Yeah, fantastic. In the Platinum Lounge, Parky, lady singing. We had interviews with Joe Mellor and Ethan Ryan. Paul's favourite, Chris Wellham, was there as well. He had an interview as well. Great food as well. Great company. First time you've met Mark in the flesh. What a great day.
Yeah, I don't know really what I expected, but it was better than I could have. like you say, I mean, the Platinum sort of lounge itself is really good, isn't it? The food's good. Like you say, they had the singer on, which it took me about 15 minutes to realise it wasn't being piped through the speaker. So it was actually someone singing in the corner. I didn't have a clue. And then, like you say, they had the interviews. And then Martin Burkett, Shane Hanson were in there with us. That was good to see them. And Chrissy Wellham, obviously, who's a bit of a legend, really. But yeah, Mark was the perfect host. I think what a great bloke he is. He's flown a long way to come over in, and obviously with his dad, his birthday and all that, but he treated us very, very well. It was a great night. Obviously, I'm delighted for the result and the performance, because it's a long way to come, and if it might have dampened it a little bit if we hadn't got the result. But no, brilliant. I can't thank Mark enough for his hospitality, because it was superb. And just chatting to him and soaking up both sides of the conversation, it was really good. And like Paul said there, for us guys to be together, because we don't watch the game together. We all sit apart in our own little spots or whatever. And that was different. That was nice. And the view from there, where we were, it's easily the best in the stadium.
Oh.
Even with my shocking eyes, I could see virtually everything. Binoculars came out every now and then. Yeah, it was brilliant. A great, great atmosphere. And as we'll discuss later on, a great game.
Yeah, add Willows vibes to it. If you say you stood in the Willows facing the club end, the bar at the top, where you had to go through like the fire exit right at the top, bit of a vibe to it in there like that, but like a modern day experience of that, I thought, especially with the singing and all the different sort of businesses well parked. You know, it was a bit of a throwback, but a modern day one. It's great the club have sort of kept that going into the new stadium.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, obviously it was a tricky night, the weather and everything else. I'm sure at other times it's probably absolutely packed in there with businesses. And if anyone has, it's a nice treat if you could do it for your family or whatever, someone's birthday or whatever. I'd go in, I'd highly recommend it. It was brilliant. You know, the staff were great. And obviously, like you say, getting these interviews and these insights into what's going on at the club. And then Paul King came over and had a chat, and Ian Blees after the game. This access to these people that you don't always get. And I know it's not, there's nothing. These guys will stop for you at any time if you see them outside or whatever. But them to come over to the table and have a chat, no, it's really, really good. And like I said, I'd highly recommend it to anyone.
Yeah. So big thanks, Mark, for your hospitality. And we'll see you again soon. So let's move on. Let's move on to the big win against Hull Kingston Rovers.
You're listening to Devil in the Detail, and this is your big match review.
So for the Devils were victorious against Hull Kingston Rovers. They won 17 points to 10. Paul, great result for Paul Rowley's men.
Yeah, it was a great result. It was a great performance, I thought. And someone said to me in the week, an old guy, "Oh, you did all right there. You played the conditions well and whatever." And I thought, no, I think you're doing us a bit of a disservice there. I think we're the better side. I think OKR turned up and I think they underestimated us. I think with all the hype they had off Sky Sports, I think they rolled up and thought we were going to turn these lot over. And I think we outplayed them every department. I thought Matt Snead was absolutely tremendous. I thought the pack were fantastic. Like I said, Jack Ormerod, King Bunny, Ayuar, Brad Singleton, they were brilliant in the front row. Even out wide, though, Chris Hankinson, I thought he had a great game. Defence was superb. He scored a brilliant try. And I think from 1 to 17, everybody played well. Everybody did the job and everybody played well. And when that happens, you can turn teams over and beat teams. So I was very, very impressed. I thought the desire and the commitment in defence was second to none. On that first half, I saw a stat when we came back into that lounge and they had the Sky Sports on the big screen. And I'm sure Hull KR had about 60-65% possession in that first half. And we went in 12-0. So absolutely tremendous. And the odds before the game with Sky as well. Salford, 100-1 to win the grand final. Hull KR, 10-1 to win the grand final. So we tore the record books up, which was really pleasing. But no, I was thrilled. I was thrilled with the performance and two wins out of two at home.
Yeah, Parker, discipline was better for me. Like Paul said, game management, Mark Snead was tremendous. And like I say, Hull KR are quite fancied, aren't they? They are going to be competing at the top, say, experts. So to beat them at home is a good sign of where we are and where we're going.
Well, without doubt. I mean, I said last week on the podcast that I just thought, okay, I had enough too much for us. I did go for quite a close defeat, but I thought the way they were playing, the role they were on, the vibe around the club at OKR, everything's on the up. But I think, like Paul said, I think they came here with a slight attitude problem, maybe thinking that it might be easier than it was. And that's not going to be the case for anyone. I mean, we saw on Sunday with Hull and London. Nobody's going to get rolled over that easily if you turn up with the wrong attitude. It's that simple. But I just thought our defence, it was a spell there. We'd gone 12 up. No, we hadn't. It was before that. We were 6 up. And OKR had a sustained period of pressure on our line. And we just kept holding them out and holding them out. And it's defensive efforts like that that break other teams. They break the heart. They think, how are we going to get through this? The passion that the lads shown was unbelievable. And like Paul said there, the commitment. I thought after the game, I thought, during this season, we'll get beat. And we might take a few big ones at certain times with injuries and that kind of thing. It can happen. But there's one thing that nobody's going to beat this team on, and that's heart and passion. They don't want to get beat. They're not there just to roll over for teams. And the way we stood up to a really good OKR team, they've got a really good pack, big pack, a lot of strong forwards in there. We just give them nothing for large periods of the game and dominated in terms of not so much in possession, but just that feel that they're not going to get past us. They're not good enough to get round us. And then again, like Paul said there, just picking up a few names. I mean, Max Snead, man of the match, he was unbelievable. But I think Chris Hankinson has done himself the absolute world of good, because if Nofaluma comes in, eventually Ethan Ryan, someone's dropping out, and at the moment he's undroppable. He's a centre playing on the wing, and he's been absolutely phenomenal. His defence, every time he's up against really good wingers there for OKR, he wasn't out of place for anything. I just thought he was magnificent. And then I know we'll talk about it again in a bit, but for me, I thought Amir Burrough putting in virtually 80 minutes at hooker in this modern day game is something very, very special. And I watched it back that night, and I think he was in every tackle. He just didn't stop, and he's game, very, very game. When he got a bit rough, there was a bit of a rumble out there, he was the first man in. And I love that. I love the character of him. And his play from the play the ball got us going forward. Something I look at hookers quite a lot. You've got to be careful how you say that, haven't you? But I watch hookers. They're all good teams. Have great hooker. You just look at what James Roby did for God knows how long for Saints. The way he passes the ball from acting half, the proper, whoever's running onto it, has no option but to run full pelt onto it. There's no waiting for it. It's not going up. It's not going down. It's right in the bread basket and off you go. So many really good performances from the lads. But it was that desire and that will to win that OKR just couldn't better.
Yeah, I often say, Paul, we are the opportunity club. And like Parky said, Hankinson and Amir Burrough taking that opportunity and thriving. Talking about Hankinson, I remember it might have been 90 seconds to go, two minutes and a half to go. He caught a bomb and they were loaded on that side looking for an error, and he caught it on the full and made meters as well. Big moments, big players, and I think obviously diffused the pressure, and we were away then.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with Chris Hankinson. I mean, I don't think he's the quickest bloke in the world, is he? But he's more of a sender, I think, than a winger. Anyway, so he's probably playing a bit out of position, but I think his defence was superb, and his attitude, and that's why Paul Rowley signed him, because he's got a good attitude, and he's a good bloke, and that's what this team's full of. And you could see that come through on Saturday. The attitude of the side, I thought, was outstanding. It's that desire and that will to win, and when you've got that, I thought, a team full of superstars, you're going to win games, aren't you? And no, I was thrilled with that. And like you said, Chris Hankinson, I thought, worked his socks off there. And they really did dig in. They had to dig in, because OKR chucked a lot at them. Mikey Lewis is quite a tricky player. They've got a big pack of forwards as well. And we had an awful lot of defending to do in that game. And we did. We kept them out for, 55 minutes. And I think Hiku scored, didn't he? We got a man Simbin there, Dion Cross, which was a bit daft. He didn't really need to do that. I thought it was a bit harsh, though, to be honest with you. But no, I was very, very pleased with the defence. I thought the defence was outstanding.
Yeah, just quickly run through the timeline. Salford opened the scoring through Dion Cross. Lovely kick by Mark Snead. And Dion Cross got there. Won the foot race. Salford led 6-0, Parker.
Yeah, it's the brains of Snead, isn't it, that? He spotted that. I mean, it's something they've obviously looked at in training, that the way the OKR wingers come off the line and leave space in behind. The kick was pinpoint. Couldn't have been any better. A little bit harder it goes out of play, a little bit softer the OKR player gets on it. It's just bounced straight through, and Dion, he's got a lot to do still, don't get me wrong, but he's just got to dive on it, really. But he's got to be there. You've got to be switched on. And that's, again, we play with four centres across the back line there. They're not wingers. And that's something that you get used to, a position. So for him to actually be there and be ready for that, that was brilliant. But Snead, the brains, his kicking game the other night was just absolutely on point.
Yeah, Salford doubled the lead with a try from Chris Hankinson. Pass by Cade Cust, and Hankinson picked it up off his toes. Paul crashed over to score. Salford led 12-0.
Well, in them conditions, Rob, it was a great pickup. He was absolutely chucking it down the pitch. I wouldn't say it was as bad as some of the pitches I've seen so far this year. He was cutting up a bit, though, wasn't it, because there was a bit of water on it. So he picked the ball up cleanly there. I thought he did really well there, Hankinson. And considering the squad as well, people keep saying, oh, Salford have got the smallest squad. I'm not sure how many players we've got, 25, 26. We've got Ryan Briley out before the game. He pulled up with an injury. Oliver Partington's out. We've got a number of other players out as well. So I think the players that are doing really, really well that came in and that are in, I thought Chris Atkin at full back got caught out a couple of times, but I thought he was brave as they come. I thought it was a really brave performance from him as well. And but at short notice, you just slip in there. I mean, losing Briley was a massive thing, and you wouldn't have thought so because the players just sort of just got on with it. And I listened to Mark Sneed's interview at the end of the game, and what a man he is. He's just brilliant. I mean, someone chucked a pint at him, and he just laughed it off. He just laughed and said, oh, it's all right. And I thought, what a great attitude to have. Just crack on with it. And if all the players have got that sort of attitude, this team's going to go a long way.
Yeah, so Salford went in 12-0 up at half-time. Mark Sneed kicked a couple of penalties in the second half early. We were reduced to 12 men because Dion Cross got put in the bin. Silly, trying to stop the restart quickly. Parky, we talked about RL discipline, but I suppose it's different this one. He's trying to be smart, but I think the referee probably looked at Dion Cross and thought, this isn't you, Dion, what are you doing? While he raised his yellow card. So I suppose he'll live and learn. And it's the way he moves on.
Yeah, I know. We mentioned it last week, though, with Jack Ormond-Roy. It's little things like that that don't need to be done that can cost you games. Mm. And they, straight away, you saw from the penalty, they attacked that side where Dion would have been. They did a shift to the left and then right back to the right. They were targeted and then ended up scoring on that side because we were a man light. And that's the difference it makes. We can't afford that. Not at the moment. And it was a silly one. Joey Burge, we know he can do that. We know he can tap it and go. He's done it for us enough times and made 60, 70 metres. If that's the case, that's the case. That's not your problem to deal with. He didn't have to do that. And it's just those little things that we need to cut out. And at the moment, like I said about Chris Hankinson on the wing, we've got two wingers trying to get fit to get into that team. Little mistake like that, it costs you a game or something. You don't play. So his players have just got to switch on a little bit more when it comes to that kind of thing. I know what he was trying to do. I don't think there's any need for it. I also don't think it's a yellow card because the playing's already stopped. What's it doing, really? But it was definitely it's a penalty. You don't do it. Just take that risk out of the game. At the moment, referees, I'm not saying they can't happen, but it's part of their rules. They've got to stick to it. Otherwise, they'll get done by the RFL for not sticking to them. So that's the way it is. But just we don't need that. Let's just keep it because, like you said, our discipline the other night was much, much better than it was against Cass and against Leeds. And it just one little incident like that, and it can cost you a game because it nearly did turn a little bit at that point.
So we were a man light. Paul, Peter Hickey scored for them in the corner, and then Jez Litton burst us down the middle, and he went over 16-10.
Yeah, I still wasn't worried, to be honest, because I thought we were managing the game really well. And I think we called it, didn't we, when we stood together about Mark Sneed going for that drop goal. I still think the scoreline flattered Rovers a bit. I thought we were better than them in every department, really. But no, we did let them get back into the game a bit there. But there was a sheer weight of possession, I think. They had a lot of ball, didn't they? And you can only hold out for so long, can't you? And yeah, they got a couple of tries there and it did sort of ease the way back into it. We Sneed, his game management, I thought, was great. Mark Sneed's got this ability to be able to play the game at his own speed, I think, and slow a game down and let everybody else play at the speed he wants to play. That's how clever he is. That last sort of 10, 15 minutes, he knew exactly where to kick the ball. He's putting the ball out in touch and slowing it down. And then he was in the pocket there for that drop goal. You knew that was going over. And to me, that he's one of the best players in the league for that. There's not many other halfbacks in the league who can manage a game like he can. And when he's on form, you're going to win matches. And I was thinking the other day, why did Hull FC get rid of him? When we got him a couple of years ago, was it crazy? Because they've never replaced him. So, no, I think he's definitely our talisman, Rob. I think tremendous, tremendous player. And a bit like when sort of Warrington had Lee Breers. You knew you've got a bloke there who can win your games because he's so clever. His brain is thinking all the time and doing things. He's kicking with short kickoffs, or his short kicking game is brilliant. His long kicking game is good, and his goal kicking His goal king is absolutely tremendous. So, yeah, he's definitely ace in our pack, is Mark Snead.
Yeah, worth his weight in gold, Parker. Not missed a kick yet this season. So important in the modern day. You turn four into six, and like Paul said, his kicking game around the field, his management of the game, the way he G's everyone up or calms everyone down, depending on what the situation is, world class.
Look, the first three games of this season, I think have been three of his best I've ever seen him play. In terms of he's another year older, another year experienced, and he's putting it all into his. He's always had like skills. His kicking game's always been brilliant. Everybody knows that in rugby league, but he's now sort of managing games. He is the leader out there. Maybe in the last couple of years we've had a Brody Croft there who's took a bit of shine off him and that kind of thing. Now he's put his hand up and said, "I'm the man for this team." And it's that old saying where a halfback's played in a dinner suit. He basically did. He makes it look easy. And I mean, he drew that penalty out of Mikey Lewis when he kicked the ball. He saw his timing and everything. He knew he could get a penalty somehow out of this. And Lewis didn't do much wrong. He just don't want to need to make contact with him. But Sneedy sort of made sure he delayed the kick just enough that he drew him in and basically mugged him with it. And then as soon as you get a penalty, he's taking two and it's going over. When he misses, that's when you get shocked, isn't it? You're like, what's happened there? But no, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. He's come. He's really sort of come of age, and if we can keep him fit and playing in that form all year, we've got a real chance of achieving a few things this season.
Yeah. So last 10 minutes, OKR ramped up, but our defence held firm, and we took the points, which was fantastic. Talking about the stats, Paul, for both teams, they completed at 87%. They both had 29 sets each. They had more carries than us. They had 166 carries. We had 148 carries. And they'd made more metres than us, 1,109 metres to 978 metres.
Yeah, I think the possession evened itself out in that second half, didn't it? I know the first half that they sort of dominated the possession, didn't they? Didn't do much with the ball. So, no, I remember thinking at the time, they've got a big pack. Okay, I thought we contained them. I thought we contained them pretty well and did a good job on them. The stats don't really say that, but the biggest stat's the scoreboard, Rob, isn't it? And for me, and I thought we did the damage and did the job, really. We kept disciplined as well. For that second half, I think OKR were losing the plot a bit a few times, weren't they? You know, they got a bit upset with Tim Laffey when he went for a handoff and that Jez Litton come swinging his arm. I mean, he could have been sent off for that, really, because he was coming in looking for, you know, looking to take somebody out, wasn't it, with his swinging arm? So, no, I think we managed it really well. Obviously, stats probably point to them dominating the game a bit more, but we got the win.
Yeah, we made 291 tackles. They made 287 tackles. It says ball run. I presume that's carries with the ball, metres made. They made 508 metres. And it says we made 1,200 metres, but we only made 900 metres in total. So I'm not quite sure how that works. Dummy half runs, 12 each. Pass completion was 572 for us, 595 for them. Kick from hand for us was 646, 337 for them. And we had 43 missed tackles and they had 25 missed tackles, Parker.
Yeah, well, that last stat's still not brilliant. We had that last week, didn't we, the missed tackle thing. That's slightly worrying. But like you say, if they have more possession, you're doing more defending, that's probably likely to happen. What did surprise me was that completion rate for both teams in them conditions. That's really high. That's 87%. It was an awful night. I mean, certainly for the first half when the ball was still soaking wet and everything else. That's really good. Really, really good. But I think, like Paul said, I think the main stat that matters out of all that was the scoreboard. And again, watching the game, I didn't think we were on the back end of any of them stats. I thought we were better at everything really than they were. I think we completed better. It looked that way. We tackled better. We seemed to make more meters. Our kicking game was far superior. I mean, again, back down to Sneedy really. I know Cust had a few good kicks as well, put a very clever couple of kicks in, but then that turned them round and made them work harder out of defence. Pudgy under a lot of pressure a lot of the time. We kept kicking to him. Obviously, there's no point kicking to Ryan Hall. That's just a fool's errand, really. So, yeah, we kicked to Budgie. We know he's got a blunder in him, and he did come up with one. Again, kick pressure. It just seemed like, for me, we did everything better than they did. And I'm not taking it away from OKR. I think they'll still be a decent side this year, and I think they can still achieve. But I just think on the night, we were the much better team.
Yeah, individual stats. Paul. Top tacklers, Mark Steed with 19, Brad Singleton with 28, Amir Burrow with 34, Sam Stone with 23, Callum Watkins with 31, Joe Shorrocks with 33, and Jack Armour with 25.
Yeah, I thought Joe Shorrocks put a big shift in. When he was on, he worked really hard, and that's why I got so excited when we signed him, because he's a very, very clever player. I was surprised when Wigan let him go. I couldn't believe it, to be honest with him, when Wigan let him go. But he worked so hard in attack and defence. Well, a bit like the role Mark Flanagan used to play, that sort of in between, that glue that Watto used to say is the glue between the two. Shorrocks is a bit like that. But every team needs a player like that who's working all the time and doing the tackling. And Sam Stone, just got to mention him again. I think we spoke about Sam last week. He's vastly becoming one of the best back rowers in the league for me. I think Sam Stone's got a great future. Shane Wright's getting better and better each week. Still, he's got a lot to come back from. It's a big confidence thing, that injury. He's getting there every week now. And we've got a good pack. We have got a good pack on the quiet. We've not got probably the biggest pack in numbers. We're a bit light on front rowers. But I think our first choice side there, it just goes to show. It's a good team. Cade Cust as well has impressed me, because I think perhaps Cade Cust is the reason why Max needs to have a bit more freedom. I think Custy's probably said to him, "You're the man. You know, you lead the team, and I'll work off you." Whereas last season it was different with Brodie Croft. If you look at Sneed, he's playing a different role to what he was playing last season. He's sort of dominating more, and Cust working off the back of him. And Cust's a clever footballer, and he's also a big lad as well, and he can do the tackling. So I think Cade Cust and Mark Sneed, it's a new relationship. It's only 3 games old, but I think it's blossoming now. I think they're starting to work really well together.
Yeah, ever since I told Joe Shorrocks he reminds me of Sam Panapa, playing like world-class loose forward packer.
Well, yeah, I mean, wow. If he's as good as Sam Panapa, we're not going to go far wrong there, are we? I think the thing, I like Shorrocks. I liked him at Wigan. I think, again, I'm with Paul. I don't quite understand what Wigan are thinking. Not that they particularly need him, because they've got a great team and a brilliant pack anyway, but him and Ollie Partington obviously missing. Two very, very versatile forwards who have got a lot to offer. Great hands, but also big lads. And some of the hits that Shorrocks put in the other day, by the way, were bone shakers. Mm. There was one where I think everybody in the West Stand sort of just went, "Oh!" I think everybody felt it when he hit him. I can't remember who the OKR player was, but he killed him dead. But there, you just going on about the tackling there, and Amir Burrow, I think he mentioned, did the most. Doesn't surprise me. Really doesn't. Just what a little dynamo he was the other night. But yeah, and then you look at the team of the week that's been picked, and obviously Sneedy's in there, but Callum Watkins gets in. We've not even mentioned him. Mm. I mean, this is a wonderful problem to have. I mean, you're trying to list so many players that your skipper's getting in team of the week and we're not even thinking about it. Because I think with Cal, you expect it. It just happens. That's what he does. Yeah. But yeah, it's so promising, that back row. And I think, obviously, we will get Ollie back, hopefully, sooner rather than later. We have got Duff Loomer and Ethan Ryan to come into that team. Ryan Brearley, like you say, missed the game. And then, I know when we had Paul King on the other week, we're still chasing a prop. We actually look quite strong. If we can keep that team together, we really do look strong, and it's so encouraging. And that performance again the other day, I mean, the Leeds game put me on a good footing. The Cass game, we nearly let it slip, but we were dominant for big parts of that. So it's just about concentration. It's early season. And then Saturday, against all the pundits and even myself, we proved everybody wrong with an outstanding performance. So things are looking quite rosy.
Yep. Top meter makers, Paul Neil McDonald, 102. Tim Laffey, 136. Brad Singleton, 84. Callum Watkins, 141. And the others were round about 60.
141 for Callum Watkins. That's an outstanding stat. And like Pike said, just echo what he said, really. I don't think we mentioned Callum Watkins, because he's an absolute world-class player. And you just sort of, it's not out of the ordinary for Callum to play well, because he always plays well. And yeah, I think he's got better and better for us. He's having a real Indian summer at Solihull. Probably at the back end of his career now, but he's never, ever let us down. What the experience he brings to the team is absolutely vital. People look up to him in that team. And I think when he's around, he has a calming influence on that side as well. And yeah, I think he's been tremendous. Like Brad Singleton was good as well. I think he's another one who doesn't take a backward step. He's aggressive. He gets on his front foot. Jack Ormerod, I thought, was good. I thought that's the best game he's had for Solva for a while. That his form has been in and out. But if he can get that form back, he's a big lad. He was a big, aggressive lad, and I think there was a couple of times there was a bit of handbags, weren't there? And I saw Brad Singleton was in the middle of that, and you wouldn't mess with him, would you? I mean, you interviewed him the other week, and he's a bit of a beast, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's very straight. He's like, he's a rugby league player. That's his job. He comes to work and goes home. There's no airs and graces about him. No, I thought he had a good game. I thought he played really well. Amir Burra as well. Just, I know you've already mentioned him, but I think we had this discussion before the season, didn't we, about Amir, when we were saying about signing other hookers and things like that. And I think we said that it's up to Amir Burra now to make that number nine his own. He's got the opportunity now. And he's taking that opportunity with both hands. He really is, because he's working his socks, so he's getting better and better every week. You can see the confidence coming out in him now as well. And I'm delighted for him. And the good thing about Amir as well, which I love, he's got the aggression, and he's a bit niggly as well. And I like that about him. He's a winner. So I think we've got a little gem in him. I think he could be a really, really top player.
Yeah. Average Gaines, Parker, Neil MacDonald, 10, Tim Laffey, 8, Amir Burra, 7, King V, 8, Callum Watkins, 9. So Callum in all three categories. Obviously, that's why he's in Team of the Week.
Does anyone remember when Callum Watkins was an international centre? You know what I mean? He looks like an international back rower. It's just bizarre. He made that transition without anybody even thinking about it. And if you needed to, I bet you could just stick him back in the centre now. Talking of centres, MacDonald. Wow.
Mm.
Wow. This man's a beast. An absolute beast. I mean, he is a big lad. You can see that. But the metres he makes, he is in contact. Every time someone gets hold of him, he's still going forward. I mean, we're lucky to have Tim Laffey in one centre, who we all adore. We all quality. But Nene MacDonald, or Nene, sorry, Nene, been corrected, it's Nene. Nene MacDonald is absolutely, I think he's good enough to go back to the NRL. I really do. I don't know what Leeds did to him, because he looked brilliant at Lee, went to Leeds, made a real big impact, and then fell out with everybody. So, but that's not unusual there, is it? Bit of a basket club claim. And then he's come here, three games in. He must have made over 100 metres in every game. And that's massive for us, because we said last few years, we don't make enough metres coming out of defence or coming off our own line. Him and Timmy Laffey give us that. And I think Nofaluma could give us that when he comes into the team. He's another strong lad. We look different. Then we're on the front foot. Then Mark Snead, Cade Cust, Amir Burra do what they do, get us going forward. He just turns the whole game around, having players like that in your team. So really positive to see players getting over 100 metres. You know, when you think it was only a season, maybe a season and a half ago, where we had a game where nobody made more than sort of 30 metres. I mean, we're coming a long way.
Yeah. Big thanks for your three-word man of the match reports. Luke O'D, determined, disciplined, Snead. Andy, Lancashire, defence wins matches. Snead. Parker, you said dug deep again. Amir Burra. Richard Martin, fantastic. Team spirit, Snead. Bill Lever played so well, Snead. Colin Wilson, super smashing, great, Snead. David Walling, guts, determination, success, OSF. Team performance shines, Snead. I said Platinum Club Reds, Amir Burra. Anita, forwards were awesome, Snead again. Mark, discipline wins games, Shorrocks. Pete Brady, defence wins games. David Deakin, who expected that, Snead. Paul Whiteside's mate, Roy Olivis, supreme team effort, Snead. Natalie Taylor, wasn't expecting that, Snead. Chris and Janet Shenton, great overall performance, Snead. Christopher Fletcher, solid performance, Snead. Chris Sloan, defence wins game, Snead. Jeff Whitlow has to be Snead. Paul Johnson, defence was awesome. Chris Bowles, discipline controlled attacking. Mike Hereford, Shorrocks played amazing. Steve Busby, discipline Snead improving. No, discipline improving Snead, sorry. Doug writing Lawrence Jones, Snead. So lots of people picking Mark Snead, Paul, and it's understandable, you know, with his performance.
Yeah, a few of them are more than three words, weren't they?
Yeah.
Some were less than three words. Yeah, it's understandable. I thought Sneedy was great, and like Park said before, he's playing some of the best rugby I've ever seen him play towards the end of his career. What is he, 32, 33? And he's had three cracking matches, and you could have named him a man of the match for all three of them, because he's dominated all three. He dominated Leeds, really. I mean, in that game, I thought he was pretty unlucky not to get something. Last week, he was great. Everything came off him. You look at how many try assists he's got in three games. He's created a... he got two against OKR, or one. He got a couple against Cass. Leeds, he was good with his kicking as well. So everything's coming off him at the moment. Please God he don't get injured, but because we might struggle without him. But no, he's been tremendous. But no, it's good to see a lot of names getting mentioned on the three-word match reports because we've got some good performers.
Yeah, so let's move on to our ladies. They were in action before the game. They played Hawkins, the Rovers ladies, in torrential downpour conditions. Paul, unfortunately, went down to defeat, 16 points to 4. Effort was there, but obviously conditions like that, it's a great leveller.
It is a leveller in conditions like that. It was pretty dicey before the men's game kicked off, wasn't it? It looked like it was blooming snowing and that. But it's difficult playing those conditions. But you know, same for both teams, Rob, isn't it? You've just got to get on with it. I mean, you get this sort of weather at this time of year, don't you? It's not summertime yet and what have you. So a bit of a struggle and a bit of a slog in that. And from what you guys have said and what I've read, it was like the OKR sort of overpowered us a bit, really, didn't they? And we're a bit too powerful for us.
Yeah, obviously, we're going to run through the timeline, Parker. Salford started well. Winger Emily Webb nearly went over in the corner after good work from Becky Davis. But then, unfortunately, Hulk Yard did score the first try. Lewis Brown crashed over. Salford's defence couldn't deal with power and the pace and the strength that close to the line.
Yeah, it was a disappointing try to give away, really. I think we had enough bodies to have stopped her. I mean, they did have a couple of big forwards, OKR, who were always going to be a bit of a problem for us. And we are rebuilding. I'm not trying to be harsh or anything, but obviously I'd say the same about any of our teams, that if you don't perform to your best and you don't defend the way you should, like we saw the men's team do on after it, you're going to get beat. It's simple as that. And individual errors are a big problem there. So when they have got big forwards, like Rovers did have, we were going to be behind the eight ball a little bit. And I will say, that pitch they played on, I thought somebody was growing potatoes on it.
Yeah.
It was awful. I'm surprised they bothered playing, to be honest. It just looked awful. I don't know how you get any flowing rugby going. It's no good for anybody. It's not a spectacle. And while we're trying to bond and get together, we probably need, with us having a smaller pack, we probably need harder ground. I know we said it in the past about the men's team, but when the pitch is firm up, I think you might see the best of us.
Yeah, I remember stood on the sidelines looking at the pitch. I remember what Paul King said to us a couple of weeks ago, where you think if sometimes the pitch is a bit gammy, they try and train at MMU. And I was looking at it thinking, Monday, MMU, I reckon. Yeah. But it's one of them where they have to play on what's in front of them, don't they? Salford responded really well. Emily Bagley went on a bit of a rampaging run. And Emily Carlisle went knocked on close to the line. Pressure was built. Then Paul, from a dropout, Linda Egan went on a big run. She gave it to Sam Evans, who produced a wonderful ball. Jadine McVernon. And she went over in the corner, and it was back in the melting pot, 4-6.
Yeah, sounds good. Try that. I didn't see that try, but it sounds good. And then you painted me a picture there with that one, Rob. But in those conditions as well, it's always going to be difficult, isn't it? So, like Parky said there, it just needs a bit of work now, doesn't it? You go down to a defeat like that, you've just got to work at it, haven't you? And work a bit harder in your defence and what have you.
But like you say, in, I suppose in them conditions, we're a team, I think, that's built to move the ball. But when you've got rain and wind and mud, it's five drives, kick and squeeze. It wasn't built for our flowing rugby.
Was a good try, it really was. What I will say is the OKR fullback was lucky to stay on the park or at least not get 10 minutes, because as she went over, she took a high around the head, and it looked deliberate. I watched it back again today, and I'm still not convinced that the referee saw it. And he's only a young lad, the referee, wasn't he? So I don't know whether it was just an experience thing or what, but she was quite lucky to stay on the park, because if we hadn't scored, he'd have had to give a penalty or penalty try anyway. But yeah, the build-up play before it was superb. And like you say, in them conditions, keeping the ball moving like that, we outnumbered him out on that flank, which isn't easy to do, because that's quite a tight pitch as well, that. So it was a good try. We took it well. And at that point, you're thinking, well, maybe now we can push on. We're in the game. We know how to get round him. But as we'll say, it didn't happen.
Yeah. Unfortunately for us, Hawkins Rovers on half time crashed over. Alicia Brewster took on the Salford defence, crashed over by the posts. Paul put them in front at half time, and obviously conditions got worse as the games went on.
Yeah, they did get worse. It got worse as the afternoon went on and the evening went on, really, Rob, didn't it? So when you're down there in the the second half, it's only going to get harder, isn't it? It's hard to run in them sort of conditions, isn't it, and make any sort of yardage. And we get games like that, and points are few and far between, aren't they? And I think Old Care have probably done that speed work in the first half and probably just done enough to keep themselves in front, really.
Yeah, second half, obviously, like you say, with the rain and the mud and the wind, it became a game of endurance for me, Parker. We struggled to get in positions to hurt Hull Kingston Rovers. Part of it was them playing the conditions better than us, I thought. But like you say, you can only defend so well for so long under that kind of pressure.
I think, again, that just comes down to having a bigger pack, bigger players to grind out them yards in them horrible conditions. We're really not built for that. We want to be flowing. We want the ball to move. A bit like the men's team in that way, that we play that way. And I think that's the advantage that Rovers had. They just had bigger players. Certainly two or three were really, really big, strong girls. Quick as well. When they broke the line, they had a bit of pace about them, even in that mud. So it was always going to be difficult from that point on. I'm not blaming the conditions for us getting beat, but it didn't help us in the way we want to play. And if you're geared up with big packs, when the sun comes out and it gets warmer and hotter and the going gets harder, that's when we might benefit. We've probably got other players to come in yet anyway, but that was always going to go against us. And like I say, we just need to work a little bit more on the one-on-one hits, making sure we stick, or at least slow them enough whilst my teammate comes in. Because they just made too many metres for us. And when you're on the back foot and you're defending in them conditions, you're not going to hold out.
Mm. But when we did get in Pipal, we had chances. Jem Myler, lovely pass by, I think it was Demi Jones, put her through a gap. She knocked on as she was crossing the line. Jadine McVernon on the edge, nearly crashed over in the corner. Alex Simpson with a little kick through, got pulled back for offside. It was one of them games where just needs a bit of luck and a bit of territory, and we win that game. But like you say, in them conditions, it just becomes a war of attrition, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you've got to get your defence right first, haven't you, Rob? You were saying that about the defending and whatever. So get that right, and then you can move on and start winning games. But it sounds to me like, okay, I just had the edge in that game, didn't they? And a bit of hard work and get back on that training pitch, and the next time they play Hull Kingston Rovers, then maybe we can turn them over.
Yeah.
Well, One thing I will say, by the way, sorry, I've just seen the Warrington ladies team for this year, and there's four names in there that I can see that were with us last year. That's not going to help us at all. Four very key players as well. Serena Tamu, Meg Conliffe, who we've had on the podcast, Louise Fellingham, who was skipper, Lauren Ellison, another really good player. We've lost that kind of talent that's been built over the last few years, and we're rebuilding, so it is going to take time. It doesn't help that our players have been poached and taken to other clubs, but it's what we as a club has faced for 150 years, basically. So welcome to it, the ladies. But we'll rebuild, and I think we will get better as the season goes on. And like I say, when conditions are more beneficial to us, I think you'll see the best of what we can do.
Yeah, remember we talked about our Player of the Year awards curse. Whoever wins Player of the Year leaves the next year. Both of our ladies who have won Player of the Year now have both left. Megan Cundliffe and Sage Bannister. Sage Bannister's gone. I think she's going to be playing for England Touch Rugby in Australia. She's in the mix for the squad, which is great. Good luck to her. Yeah. But yeah, it's, I suppose the curse doesn't matter whether you're male or female. It's still strike, Parker.
Yeah, we need to just sign a player that we don't like, don't we? And just give it at the end of the year. Just keep him in the squad forever. Yeah, it is a shame though that the ladies team got hammered like that. I mean, who knows? A couple more results last year, we could have been in the Super League this year. And then what happens? Do all the girls stay? I don't know. Obviously, it's nice. Always nice for people to face a different challenge. But we're going to suffer a little bit for that lack of experience, I think.
But like you say, we're living, we're learning, Paul, and that's all that matters. Like you say, we've lost a few bodies, but we've brought some in as well. And obviously, it'll take time for this team to mould and grow together. Obviously, only the first two games of the season. I think next game's against Lee at the end of the week. So another opportunity to get together and try and get that result.
Yeah, it does. It does take time to build teams, doesn't it? When you've lost players as well. And the four players you named there were really big names in the team last season. Louise Fellingham, the captain and leader. She was an inspirational leader, wasn't you? So you can't just replace these people overnight, can you? It does take time. So I'm sure as the season goes on, you know, things will get better.
Yeah. So that's the match reports, and now we'll do news.
Devil in Detail News.
So we'll start with Salford Council. They've given Salford £315,000 Parker to tide us over while the negotiation of the stadium is going on. Obviously, it's great. We've talked to Paul King about the process and how long these things take. We know now the wheels are in motion, which is great.
Yeah, I haven't been able to read the full story. It was on the Evening News website, but on my phone, I can't sort of make it any larger. It just goes full of adverts, so I couldn't actually read the full thing. But I presume is this a loan or has it been given?
It's part of the, it's called the Subsidy Control Act.
Right.
So okay. I think it's to keep you going until we've organised it. Here you go. I don't know whether we have to pay it back or not, but it is what it is, Paul. Great things. Obviously, we know what the situation is. Paul King was crying out for to get it over the line quicker or a bit of assistance. So I think we were due it because we've been waiting for, 2 years?
Yeah, well, what I'll say is that if they're giving us 315 grand now, that just shows how much money we've actually lost out on in the last 12 months while all this has been fumbling along. I know it takes a long time, and that's why Paul King was obviously called him out basically when he did back end of last year, was it November last year? That's money that we've lost out on as a club. That's why Brody Croft and Andy Ackers and people like that have had to leave. If that's the kind of money we're looking at, by the way, and I don't know this, this is just me as a layman thinking this. If this is the kind of money we can be looking forward to over the next 12 months and then for the next 15 years, I mean, that's going to transform this club. We're not going to be selling players. We're going to be building and making more money and hopefully bigger crowds, therefore more money coming in. Paul obviously mentioned about we've got an idea for a shop coming or whatever it is that's happening. It gives us that money then to make these things happen. It's such a massive thing, this. And we've got to be grateful to the council for doing this. They've been very, very supportive recently. Certainly the mayor's been tremendous behind us. And I know that council funds are very, very tight. You just have to try and go down the road that I live on without falling down a pothole. But it's magic. And the city needs it. The city needs this club. We might not get the biggest crowds, but you've seen when we do get on a roll that people are there and people are interested. People are proud of this club. And we just need a little bit of success. And this now, this kind of money coming into the club is going to help us get there. And this is what we've been lacking for, 12 years or whatever since we've been there at the stadium. Can you imagine how much money that would have been if this agreement would have been in place from the start? I mean, we'd be massive. So, brilliant news. And fingers crossed we can work with this money now and not just sustain us, but help us move forward.
Yeah, Paul, it does say Salford Council spokesman says, we have agreed temporary, reasonable and proportionate financial support of £315,000 in line with the Subsidy Control Act, which will support the club to get on a firm footing as we move on to the next stage. So it's part of the process to obviously put us in a good space going forward.
Yeah, let's hope so. And like Parky said there, you don't want to keep losing your gem of players, do you? Because it's like playing snakes and ladders, isn't it? You're building up and then you're dropping down that bloody snake again, aren't you? And you build up, get a good side, go up the ladder, and then you're down again. So we don't want our best players being poached again now, do we? We want to try and build this, because you can imagine if we'd have had a decent amount of money over the last few years. I mean, players are always going to move on, aren't they, with the ambitions and things like that. But we might have been able to hang on to a few of them and build round it, and we could have won something by now as well. We've been challenging. So yeah, let's hope it's going to be a road to recovery, really, because you don't want to be worrying about finances every season, because every off-season we seem to be in the news for stuff, don't we? And there's always worries, isn't there? There seems to be, anyway, about the stadium and this, that and the other. I mean, that was a bit of a worry this year, whether we're going to have an home, whether we're going to this stadium, that stadium. So I think if you're sort of a casual supporter, well, not people like us aren't bothered, are they? But if you're a casual supporter, you want to be associated with something that's sustainable, don't you? And we don't want to be going watching a club that's in, you've got doubts about and all that. I'm probably struggling for my words here, but you know what I mean. People want to be associated with success, don't they? And not money troubles and things like that. So yeah, I'm hoping it's going to be on the road to recovery for us now.
Yeah. Gaz Carter in his match report stated that it might be mid-month when it gets completed. So that's something to look forward to. Moving on, our wheelchair team are involved in the Challenge Trophy. It's on the 14th of April at the National Basketball and Performance Centre, M12. It's 11 a.m. start, Parker. They will play Edinburgh Giants, Woodland Warriors, Hereford Harriers and Rochdale Hornets. And I think the winner and the runner-up go into the Challenge Cup, which is an incentive.
Yeah, that'd be good. And I think, I don't know what the fixtures are for the men's team at that point, but I think that could be a good day out. I think I quite fancy that. I'm not a morning person, but that sounds like a bit of fun because, you know, we said it thousands of times, wheelchair rugby is absolutely magnificent to watch. So, yeah, so what was the date of that? Sorry, Rob. Just
the 14th of April is.
Okay. All right, well, check we've got no... The men's team aren't sort of away in somewhere bizarre at that point. But yeah, I think that'd be a good trip out.
Yeah, obviously wheelchair rugby's growing all the time, Paul, and it's great. They've got an opportunity now to play in this trophy. First opportunity for Savoy.
Yeah, certainly. That's exciting. You said M12, didn't you? That's
I did.
Like Gorton, Levenger, and Bellevue, isn't it? Somewhere out around there, I think.
Yeah.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
You're the boiler, man. Fix the boiler around there.
I've been to M12 before, yeah. I think it's like Bellevue, isn't it, around there? So you're like looking at East Manchester around there, aren't you? So quite straightforward to get to. So, yeah, if there's no men's game on there, it might be a little devil in the detail trip out.
Maybe. Other news, our reserves squad has been announced. Stuart Wilkinson has announced the squad. Parkey, obviously, you know, some new faces in that squad. Looking forward to see what they can produce.
Yeah, some of these lads could be the next sort of generation of players for our first team. It's going to be great to see another building year. Obviously, last year we lost some players again and people got moved on and whatever else. Without having an elite academy, this is what we use. And I think the experience these lads will gain this year will prove whether they're going to be top players or not, or whether they're going to make a career out of it. But it's brilliant to see these lads are all being pulled in from all over. But yeah, I can't wait to see how they go. I know there'll be other reserve teams who will have big first teamers in it and all that kind of stuff. We don't have that luxury at the moment. So they'll learn a lot very, very quickly, I think.
Yeah, 7 players have come through our development academy. Paul, Charlie Glover, George Chanuk, Jimmy Shields, Josh Wagstaff, Lucas Cohn, Lucas Lies and Nathan Connell. Like Parker said, our pathway is different. We don't have a sort of an academy set up, but it's great that these lads are involved and getting the opportunity to go to that next level.
Yeah, well, just mentioning Nathan Connell there, he played in the friendly at St. Helens at the start of the season, and I thought he was very, very impressive. Good kicking game, and he could be a real star of the future. So yeah, we've not got the elite pathway that some other clubs have got, but having a pathway is better than not having a pathway. So we have got something, and we've got something to build on there, and that's a good thing. So as long as we can keep building, got good people there at the club who are helping out with the reserves and whatever. Alex Davidson's involved, his assistant coach, isn't he? There, I had a good chat with him a few weeks ago in Starbucks, and was having a brew and that, and he was telling me about players that they brought in this time. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how it all pans out, and wouldn't it be great to just see somebody, whoever it is, to come through and play for the first team, because that's what it's all about. You think about the time you've watched Salford, and you always seem to favourite the local guy who comes through. I remember when Nathan McAvoy come through, and it was fantastic. He was great because he was local, and you shouted a bit more for him because you could really relate to him. So yeah, good things.
Yeah, talking about our development academy, we've got 5 lads who have been selected for trials for the under-17s. Co-ed Addy, Ellis Clark, Jack Reed, Jake Biffa and Joe Griffiths Parker, all trialling for the England Community Lions.
Yeah, all from local amateur clubs, aren't they? The Roosters, Folly. Brilliant to see that we are producing players, because it's something that we've struggled with in the city for all our time, really, because we're so dominated by football. But now it seems that finally we're getting these players coming through. I know every now and then we get a gem, don't we? We get an Adrian Morley or a Nathan McAvoy or whatever. But they're few and far between. But now it seems they're coming through in bigger and stronger numbers. And again, that's brilliant for the club. If we can, I know a lot of them do get snapped up by other clubs, but if we can get in there first and bring them into our fold, then it's only going to benefit us. And like Paul's just said there, they come from a local amateur club and then end up playing for the first team. It does mean more. It does feel better. And it gives everyone a boost. And the people in the city get behind it because somebody will know this lad who doesn't go to rugby and they'll go, I'm going to go and watch so-and-so. He can be. That definitely helps. And the other side to bringing lads in, if you can get them into this level, is it's a lot cheaper than having to go out and sign players every season. So, brilliant to see. Great work the amateur clubs are doing around this area. They're all run by volunteers, aren't they? And they're producing these players now that match anything that are coming from Wigan, Leeds, League, St. Helens, wherever. So, brilliant to see.
Yeah, talking about local amateur players, George Jamieson from the under-19 Salford Roosters, he's involved in that in the trials for the under-19s. That's obviously, like you say, local players getting chances, Parker.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I mean, these lads have earned it. They've obviously got talent. They're obviously good players, but it's getting it out of them and keeping them interested as well. It's very, very difficult. Certainly in a place like Salford and Manchester, there's a lot of other things to be doing for people. And turning up on training on a wet, freezing cold Thursday night shows real dedication. And like I say, it just shows what a great job people are doing around the game, bringing these players through. And hopefully the club can stay connected with these amateur clubs and build a better bond. No, Paul King mentioned it the other week that we're trying to bring back a couple of competitions like the old Valentine Cup used to be, get that back up and running and promote these amateur clubs. And it's a two-way thing and we will produce more players.
Yep. Let's talk about world news now. Paul, the NRL were in Las Vegas last weekend. Big crowd watching Australian Rugby League. It's great for the sport. New eyes on it. Possible new investment. Sport gets bigger.
Yeah, it certainly does. There was over 40,000 there, wasn't there? And I saw some of the pictures from the stadium as well the day before. And it looked a tremendous stadium, tremendous atmosphere. And then when you got 40,000 in there, I bet it was fantastic. I'd like to know how many Americans actually went to see that. Probably get a lot of people from Australia going over there watching the various clubs and that. But you think rugby league would take off in America because they seem to like sort of contact sports, don't they? Now I've watched a bit of American football on the telly, and that's very stop start, isn't it? It's not really all action, is it? Like rugby league is. So it took a long time for football to take off over there. We're talking about 40 years. It took for football to sort of catch on, and so I don't know about rugby league, but I think it's a great idea. No, it's a great idea from the NRL, the way they've marketed that to go and play in Las Vegas. I mean, you look at the razzmatazz that you get there in Vegas. It's not much bigger, is it, anywhere? And where are we having the Magic Weekend? At Elland Road, yeah, great. With the likes of Home Base and B&Q around the back. What have they got in Vegas? All the casinos and all that. So yeah, I think 1-0 to the NRL there over Super League.
Yeah. Parker, last week you said that there was listeners messaging you saying how good the podcast was and how much they enjoyed it. This week, I had a message from one of our listeners, Daz C from Cincinnati. He said, "Hi, boys. First time contributor, long time listener. Love the podcast. What you're doing is great. You're doing a good job for all us Reds all over the world, keeping us up to date what's going on. I live in Cincinnati, USA, and I often listen to you when I'm out camping, hiking, or hunting for coyotes, elks, and the odd American black bear." Now, I've got to stop you there, Daz. I'm going to say this. I think it was just as a gimme. Just make sure when you're listening to this podcast, you do it in a safe environment. Do not want you being jumped by a black bear listening to Parker talk about his rugby conspiracies.
Yeah, that's unusual, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. The thing about the wildlife around here, we have the odd fox. Bizarre. Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I mean, somebody in that part of the States is... Because it's obviously... You expect people, maybe the odd one in, say, New York or whatever, the major kind of conurbations that people would move to from, or maybe for work or whatever, from the UK. But Cincinnati, that's interesting. That's really good. Delightful news. It's spreading the word over there and getting people watching and playing. But I'm like, what you're saying there about the Americans, I was listening to a podcast from Down Under with Jackson Hastings this week, and he was talking about the whole Vegas thing and how good it is the NRL have done this, and the promotion, and the fact that these eyes on the game in the States, and whether it takes off, whether it doesn't, is neither here nor there, really. But there are so many athletes in the States, so many who don't make, they won't become an NFL player, they won't be a basketball player, a baseball player. They get to a certain level, but they're all proper athletes who could easily fall into another sport. They wouldn't, a lot of them won't be built for football or soccer, as they would say. So rugby league is a really viable option for them. And to promote the game over there, not just because we want the game to grow, of course we do, but the advertising. I mean, these, what, 300, 400 million people in the States? Only takes a few to clamp onto watching the NRL in the next few weeks. The sponsorship of the NRL goes up. The money goes back into the game. It's a genius move. I think I said to you guys that there was an advert, a big display in Times Square in New York, where it was a Steedon NRL ball going round, and the big screens in Times Square advertising NRL. I mean, doesn't get any bigger. And like Paul said there, we're going to Ellen Road. I think we've got a long way to go to catch up with these guys when it comes to finance and promotion, because we're miles behind over here. But I'd love it to start to really kick off in the States. I would. I think we've got that connection with the Copheads over there. We've been to Jacksonville in the past. I know there's quite a few teams, Atlanta, Rhinos and that kind of thing. But it'd be brilliant if they could get a real TV deal so it could be broadcast, so we could see it, even if it was just over the internet or whatever. But because I really believe that the Americans would love it, and they are built for it. Mm-hmm. And they've already got the pitches, stadiums and everything else to use. Doesn't these things in America just happen, don't they? I mean, it's like the stadium they played in Vegas. They could throw that up and take it down in the next 2 weeks. It wouldn't make any difference. It'd take us 12 years and £7 billion to do it. So the Americans are just ready for it. And I think, like the Aussies, they buy into it. They love that physical contact. So, yeah, let's, fingers crossed it's done some good.
All I can do, Paul, is imagine Daz wandering through this national park, coming across a black bear, and then both locking eyes, looking at each other. Seconds turns into minutes, turns into hours. Both bear and man wondering what happens next. And then suddenly...
Coach's corner.
If you're not 3 foot in the air there, Paul, I don't know what to do, really. But he does mention, he thought it was a great success. He thinks that he should be having a five-day festival with Super League matches, NRL matches and international matches all involved to try and get the general public involved.
Yeah, that's a great idea and a great suggestion. And I suppose it's probably just the finance of it all, isn't it? If we can do that, great, you do it, wouldn't you? But they'd probably be saying over here, we've not got the money for it or whatever, or getting over the logistics of it and all that. But no, it does. I've always thought, like I just said before, about like America liking rugby league. Why not? Because they like contact sports, and like rugby leagues, for me, it's too fast now. But that's another story. But I still think rugby league in its purest form, it's a great sport to watch. It's not same shape sort of ball as American football, but it's the physicality of, I suppose, isn't it? They're big blokes, aren't they? But the big blokes are having a rest every couple of minutes, whereas rugby league is go, go, go all the time, isn't it? So you think they'd enjoy that. So that's off to the NRL for going over there and doing it. It's a great idea. It's a great initiative. Like you said about Times Square there. I mean, I've been to Times Square a few years ago, and when I went to New York, I was a bit poorly at first, because not poorly, but I couldn't get my head around how many people were there. I was a bit shocked, and it was like you couldn't move. And it was then after I got used to it, the day later, it was really, really exciting. But to be able to have that sort of advertisements of that many people and getting the sport out there, like you said, even if only a small percentage of people buy into it, that's loads of people. But just going back to that bear, that sounds something. What's an elk as well? I was going to Google it a minute ago. Is an elk like a
big deer?
Elk was like a little elf or something.
Oh, no, like, right, a big deer, I think.
Right, because there's Elk Mill near us where it's like a retail park, and I always thought it was like little elves or something that used to work in the mill.
No, I think it's a big deer. I'm sure someone can Google it, but I think it might be. It's a like a big specimen of an animal. So I would worry if we had, we're in one ear and he's not quite sort of switched on. He gets charged by a group of elk. Oh, I wouldn't want to be in his position. But big thanks for your contribution, Daz. Stay safe. Keep listening. And big thanks for contacting us about it. Other news, Northern Community Competition, Parker. It's aimed at our local amateur team. They're asking teams to submit a 30-second video showing skills and rugby moves. The winner will receive a full team kit, equipment, and 30 tickets for the Super League Grand Final and the Challenge Cup Final. Second prize is 5 pieces of rugby equipment, tickets for the Magic Weekend and the Grand Final as well. And then there's a special submission, that's like third place, gets 30 tickets for Magic Weekend / Grand Final. It's great. Obviously, they're engaging with the local amateur sides. Local amateur sides obviously get, they need equipment, they need help to keep going. I think it's fantastic. This competition is open to everyone.
Yeah, who's hosting this? Who's actually running the competition?
It's Northern Rail. Right. They're running it. If you want, obviously, to send your submission in, you need to email it to game.northernrailway.co.uk.
Right, so, yeah. Well, I mean, the amateur clubs need any help they can get. And if it's as simple as just sending in a video, they may just get it done. Anyone who's listening, obviously, we can speak to people as well and just make them aware of this. I'm sure the clubs have been contacted about it and do know about it. But yeah, any help they can get, because it's so tough running an amateur club. They run on virtually nothing, and it's nice if they can get something back for it, certainly the tickets, but even a full kit for the team, because some teams, they struggle to get them, struggle to pay for them every year. You need a new kit, someone rips one. It's not as easy as you think. So no good. I hope they get involved. A lot of clubs do that, and if each age group does one as well, rather than just one as a club, do it as an age group. A much better chance of one of them winning something.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, you do your work, Whiteside World of Rugby. You know, we'll talk about all the different divisions in the amateur scene, and it's great, obviously, like, get this opportunity when the times are on at the moment to get in this competition and win it. It might be a godsend for many clubs.
You certainly will, yeah. I can never believe, particularly in the sort of the youth and junior leagues, how many teams are there. When you go through the fixtures and when I'm tracking the fixtures up on that and the results, there's lots and lots of teams at different age groups now. You're under 18s, right down to under 13s, under 10s. There's all sorts in there. I try to give them all a mention if I can, get all the teams a mention. And yeah, it's all started up again this week, hasn't it? Well, last week the National Conference Premier League started, the Northwest Men's League as well started. So the amateur scene will be back now for right through to the summer. So yeah, there's teams there that need help, isn't there? Like Pag said, it's all done on voluntary, and teams aren't awash with money. There's not a lot of money washing around the amateur sport, but these teams and these players, no matter what level you're at or what age group you're at, these are the lifeblood of the sport. This is where people come from. You look at the stars of Super League, they've all come from community clubs and amateur clubs. So yeah, it's massive. It's a massive thing to help these clubs out. And for me, my opinion, the RFL should do more than what they do, but that's another story. But yeah, if you can get behind that and this competition, Northern Rail, I mean, they're good anyway, aren't they? They should sponsor the old Northern Rail Cup, didn't they? And we've had some good days out with that. So yeah, it sounds a good competition to me.
Yeah. Final bit of news, Parky. Last week we spoke about the players wanting to improve the game and sort of grow the game and helping them do that. They all went to the RFL, according to Love Rugby League. They've reported that they've asked the RFL to provide a retirement fund of £50,000 a year for players to transition from playing to retirement. Thoughts on that?
I think it's an absolute, well, personally, I would have thought it was an absolute no-brainer. Listen, without the players that we have, these athletes who put everything out there for us every week just to entertain, I think they deserve more than they get. And certainly we've seen players when they come to the end of their career who've really suffered. They've got nothing to go to. These are full-time professionals from when they're 16, 17, but only until their early 30s. They're younger than any of us are now. And then they've got the rest of their life. And they're not trained for anything else. They're not given anything else. And I think that's something that the responsibility of the clubs have got, but also the rugby league. And I think they should be putting money aside for these guys when they do finish. I'm not saying make it easy for them. They've got to be responsible. Players, they earn fairly decent money compared to the most common men. And you've got to do your own sort of saving and your own planning. But there has to be something. Some players who will end their careers with injuries and all sorts of things, who may be not able to go to work properly anymore or do a job that they may want to. So, yeah, I think that would make sense. And they need to listen to the players. They are the game. It's as simple as that. You can be a bureaucrat and wear a suit and tie and sit in an office. You're not entertaining me and I'm not paying my money for you. I'm paying it to watch, you know, Ryan Briley every week. They're the brains of this. They're the advert we need to use. So, yeah, let's make their life a little bit comfortable if we can.
Yeah, Love Rugby League reported that also an option on the table is take a percentage of the player's wage every season. All the players obviously put into the pot for the players who are retiring. I suppose there's an option, Paul. Still negotiation to be had. We'll have to sit and wait and see. But I think it's great. Obviously, we talked last week, didn't we, about teeth and having a bit of something behind you like the GMB Union to put pressure on the likes of Super League and Rugby League. But negotiations are going well so far.
Yeah, I think the players, I mean, I wouldn't just rely on GMB Union. I think the players have got to do, probably get something together themselves, haven't they, and have a proper players union. So to farm it out to a company like GMB or Unison or something like that, I don't know. They're always in it for alternative motives, aren't they? But I think players need something. When you look at lads that are in the Championship, the League One, a lot of those lads are part-time anyway, so they'll already have a job. So like Chris Wellham's got a job at the moment. We're talking to Chris on Saturday. He does his pest control. That's doing really, really well. So you've got that job and your rugby league to fall back on. You're doing all right. But like you said, if you've played at an high level from being a kid in like an academy or something, you've gone straight onto Salford's first team or Wigan's first team or whatever, you don't know anything else. You play rugby league 7 days a week, you train, and you don't have anything else to fall back on. And not a lads do. So perhaps you just need that advice sometimes to maybe to go to college or do something. I know Leeds Rhinos used to do a lot of that when I used to work up there, and a lot of their players were at the university, at the Met University, doing stuff for after when they finished their careers and that. And it's a good thing to get involved with. So perhaps the club should time with universities and colleges and things like that just to give players something to do. I mean, I don't know really what they do, but maybe something like what I do or whatever, or doing gas or plumbing and heating and things like that. Maybe you don't know whether you want to do that after you play rugby league when you knees and back's already knackered anyway. But no, I think it's good that players have got something to. I think it's for mental as well. You see it with like other sports like boxing and things like that. When players have trained all their lives and sort of lived for that sport, they've ate well, they've starved themselves, they're living and breathing that sport 24 hours a day really. When they stop doing it, I think it's like the world's been taken away from them. So, you know, rather than do that, have them going into it sort of gradually. Because otherwise, at the end of your career, it can be a big shock.
Yeah. I say there's loads of education now available for players. I always think, like, being in the army, you come out of the army and all your structure's just gone, hasn't it, Parker? Yeah. So players have to be able to prepare for retirement, both financially, because obviously you're going from a top Super League wage to a standard average Joe wage. It's a bit of a drop, isn't it? Especially if you're not qualified for sort of anything particular.
Yeah, we train these lads to do the job, to do a job, and their job is to be a rugby player, and that's it. But there does need to be education involved and everything else. But the actual thought of players retiring, when you say retire, we're all thinking we're going to be in our 70s. Well, that's how it's going to work. These lads are retired at 35, 36, 37, in prime of your life. What then? You hit a wall, and there needs to be, I think there's definitely more support. I know Art Rugby League Cares does a great job, the charity there and that kind of thing. But I think the Rugby League does have a responsibility. And if they could put money aside, or if they can, I know you say that about the players chipping in. Well, if the players and the RFL can come up with something together where they both contribute, like a money match sort of thing, so the players raise this much per year, then the RFL put that much in as well. It's in the fund, it's in the pot. A player becomes stuck on hard times when he quits. Not just to rely on it, but there'll be players out there who will have injuries that won't be able to carry on or won't be able to do something. Maybe hand injuries and that kind of thing. So you can't go on and do something normal as a job and might need more adjustments or whatever. That money should be there for them. I really do. And I think we have to look after our players a little bit better than we do. I think too often in the past we've let players just drift out of the game, away from things, and you see what happens to them. Sometimes very tragic circumstances as well. So, yeah, I think the RFL have got a big responsibility. Super League, because of the money that at that top end of the game where it is, because, like you say, like Paul said, there are people in Championship and League One. They're not earning anything like... They do have to go out to work as well. So, yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough problem. But the players are the ones that need to be listened to in this. They're the key to it all. And hopefully both parties can come up with something that's beneficial.
Yeah, so we'll sit and wait and see what comes out of that. So that's all the news. Now we'll look forward to the game this weekend.
It's time for the Devil of the Details Big Match Preview.
So we'll start with the reserves. Paul, they're in action on Saturday. They play St Helens at Clockface Miners. First outing of the season for them. Obviously, St Helens are a good side. We saw most of their reserves, didn't we, in the friendly. So it'll be a challenge.
Oh, it certainly will be, yeah. You look at some of those players that they had in that friendly game, and they're well-drilled, well-schooled, exactly what you're going to get, particularly with Wigan and St Helens players. They're a conveyor belt of players that come through there, isn't there? So that'll be a tough test to start, but that's the kind of test they'll want. That. They'll want a good test and a good stern test to see where they're at, have a yardstick to see where they're at. So I'm sure they won't let us down on Saturday. I'm sure they'll go there and give a good account of themselves.
Yeah, new faces have come in. Parker, faces from our development academy as well. Nice mix, obviously, experience as well that have been there last season. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone watched the documentary about St Helens when they went over to Australia for the World Club Challenge last year. It was on after this year's World Club Challenge, I think, or the day before. Anyway, as a club, it's all as what they all sort of, they all play to a pattern. They're all so... So if you're an academy player now and you go into the reserves and you go into the first team, what your job is, how the team plays, you know how to fit straight in, you can be dropped in at any point. That's the level of where Saints are as a club. I mean, it was brilliant to watch this sort of behind the scenes thing. We're obviously a long way off that, a long, long way. But they've got a style of play that they play to. So from what Paul Welland says at the top, it goes right the way through the club. So our lads will go there on Saturday and they'll try, you know, they'll give everything they've got, but they'll be up against one of the elite reserve teams that they're going to meet. So like Paul said there, this is a yardstick. This is just to see how far we've got to go to get to that level. I mean, you look at the Saints team now, how many of them players were Saints Academy players of their first team? If you look at last weekend's team, I'd say probably 7 or 8 of that team came through. Even go back to, I mean, their coach they've got, Paul Wellens, came through St Helens. It's what they do, and that's the level we've got to get to. So it's a brilliant test for the lads, and I'm sure they're up for it. I'm sure they'll be buzzing to go and face basically some of the best that they're going to meet. And as the season goes on, you're going to meet teams who are going to be lower level or not as good as Saints. So I think it's a good place to start. We can see where we're at.
Yep. Our ladies are in action, Paul, this weekend on Sunday. They play Lee away from home, 2 o'clock kickoff. Keep your eyes on club socials for more details. Big challenge for Mike Grady's ladies. Played him in a friendly, lost, but obviously now they know what to face. Got another 80 minutes under the belt. Opportunity.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they did play in a friendly, didn't they? But they've got more minutes under the belt since then. So we're looking forward to this week. And hopefully the weather's a bit better. It was a bit of a naff day to play last Saturday, wasn't it? So yeah, I'm sure they're looking forward to getting out there. Because that's what you tend to be like after a defeat where you've not played well. You want to get back out there and do it justice, don't you, and play well. So I'm sure you'll get a reaction. You usually do. So I'm sure they'll be looking for that this weekend.
Yeah, they've only played one. All the teams have played one game this season. Parker, Lee beat Alton 26-6 at Alton. Bradford beat Stanley 28-22 at Stanley. We lost to Hull Kingston Rovers. Dewsbury Moor, Sheffield, and Cass didn't play. So it's going to be a tight league. There's some good teams in there, the likes of Lee. Bradford beating Stanley is a good result as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the thing I was just thinking about that with Lee. I think this will be the third time we've met them in our last four outings.
Yeah.
I think we know him quite well by now, don't we? No, it's a different team completely. And again, like Paul said, the weather's different. We don't know. It's obviously going to be a tough challenge. I think Lee would probably start favourites for this league this year, I'd presume. But we've got to be up there as one of them. Obviously, Rovers did a job on us, but I know last year we got the better of Bradford. Oldham, we beat a couple of years back, and then they beat us. It's shared, really. But yeah, I think it's going to be a tight league. But we can pick up points. Maybe the first two games are really tough when you think about it. To the bigger teams, if you like. And as the season goes on, we'll get slightly easier fixtures. So, yeah, this week again, it's another good test for the girls. Against probably the best team in the league. Let's see where we are. Let's see what we're doing. Another week working together. And just, it's probably, again, I've said it a few times in the past, it's not always about the result. It's about the performance. And I didn't think Saturday we showed our best. I know, like I said, the conditions didn't help us. But so this week is a chance now to rectify those things. And if we do, you know, if we can beat them, great. If we don't, but we put in the performance, it builds us nicely for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's move on to Paul Rowley's men. They're in action against St Helens, away from home. Paul, tough place to go, St Helens. Our record's not the greatest there. Big test, obviously. We played them in a friendly, sort of scratched about, but it was our only sort of friendly. Brian Briley, well, got injured in the warm-up against Hull KR. Probably a doubt over his fitness. I know they've brought Ethan Ryan in to the squad. So I suppose Paul Rowley's got, you know, options there.
Not the greatest, Rob. It's absolutely awful. Yeah, it's a tough place to go. It has been since I started watching Solver anyway. Wolseley Road or this new stadium. But having said that, since they've moved to this new stadium, we've come close on a few occasions. I can never remember us being that close at those, or, you know, 27-26, I think, with that Matty Smith drop goal that time. Just after Kyle Harrison got sacked. And sort of mid-90s, we had a couple. I think with Fatsini got bundled into touch off the ball. I remember that night, Friday night, I think that one. Other than that, we always used to get leathered there. So we used to play them twice as well for some reason. I remember going there twice, quite a few times on the Friday nights there and getting lamped. But no, it's an hard place to go, Rob. Like you were both saying before about like the conveyor belt, let's say, and such a professional club, aren't they? Paul Wellens will know the name of every single player at that club, at whatever level, academy level to reserve level, because that's the way you are at St. Helens. You're a player, you're part of that club, and they want you to progress and do well. They've got some lads in that team now. I mean, that George Delaney, who's come through, he's another one on the belt. What a fantastic player he is. Bennison, the lad who's been playing on the wing and a fullback, absolute natural. And then I was looking at an old programme the other day from 10 years ago, and I was looking at, obviously there's no Salford players still playing, but St. Helens, it's about four or five of them, I think, in the side 10 years ago that are still playing for them now. The likes of Makinson, Wormsley, Percival, Johnny Lomax, they've all been in that side for over a decade, and that brings along the other players, like say Jack Wellesby, who comes through, and he's probably been there a few years now, and there's another group of players coming along behind him. So it's just a never-ending sort of factory of rugby league players, really, if you like. So yeah, it's going to be a difficult game, but I'm confident we can do well.
If there is no Ryan Briley Parker, who do we play fullback? Ethan Ryan, if he's fit. Chris Atkin. I know he played fullback against Old Kingston Rovers. Dion Cross, he's played fullback before, I think, for Widnes. So, options for Paul Rowley.
I'd be surprised if Ethan Ryan actually plays. Paul Rowley said at the start of the year he was about round five or round six. Well, we're only in round three. So, it'd be miraculous, really, isn't it? If you're going to give a player his debut and a first run out, I don't think you do it away at St. Helens. I don't think you risk it. I think he has to go. If there is no Ryan, then we have to go with the team we had last week. He did as well. Chris Atkin, yeah, he missed a couple of high balls and he will get tested. That's where he's going to be. But he was brave as a lion, putting his body on the line constantly. He was in the right place at the right time. He got massive raps off everybody who was commentating on the TV. Everybody thought he had a great game. So I'd have no problem. It'd have to be Chris Atkin at fullback. But it's like Paul said there, it's a massive challenge. Every time you go to St Helens, it's a massive challenge. Well, every time you play them anywhere. But if we defend like we did on Saturday, then we'll keep in the game. I don't think we'll have enough perhaps to beat Saints. But I watched them against Lee last week, and Lee really stuck it to them. They made it hard for him. Again, discipline probably costly in the end, and that's going to be a big thing. We'll need a strong referee because we probably won't get the rub of the green most of the time. But yeah, I thought Lee really, if they'd held the ball a little bit better and kept the discipline, could have come away with something. They were really, really good. They muscled up in defence, and that's the main thing. They cut off all Saints' options, and that's what we've got to do. And then hopefully just take our chances when we've got them. We've got players who can score tries. We've got many who'll get us out of trouble now. I think Hankinson was brilliant at that the other day, and McDonald, Timmy Laffey. So, yeah, I mean, we should go there with a little bit of confidence. More than, I mean, when we went there for the friendly, I could have told you what was going to happen. And I would have expected by round three that the same thing was going to happen. I'm not sure it will now. I think I obviously fancy Sailings, and most people will, because they're at home and they're just such a great club and great team. But I think we can test them, and that's the main thing. And again, like I've said about the ladies there, if we don't get the result, it's about the performance and building on that, because we've got another tough game coming straight after that. So yeah, just come away with a game, fingers crossed, without injuries. Keep our discipline, keep men on the park, and make Saints work for whatever they get.
Prediction time, Paul?
Well, they don't concede many points, Ireland. They've played three matches and conceded 8 points in three games. So if you're going to beat St. Helens, you're going to have to defend, because they don't concede many. So you're going to have to keep them out. So I never back against Salford like the fool I am. But I can't see us winning there, to be honest. 44 years, a long time since we won there. So, but I'll go with Salford, as I always do. I'm going to go for a low-scoring game because I think they'll be hard to score against. 12-10, Salford.
12-10, Salford, Packer.
Well, there'll be no Nando's for me again this week. As everybody will hear on my predictions, I'm not confident of a win. I'm confident of a performance. So I'm going to say Saints 20, Salford 8.
28. I'm going to go Salford to win. Chris Atkin hat trick. Salford to win. Saints 10. Salford 26. 26-10. Atkin hat trick. Oh.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to slag it off, Rob. I hope it comes true. So, yeah, you never know with rugby league, dear. You never know. One thing that I just hope doesn't happen is we get somebody sent off early doors, or someone gets sin-binned, and we're sort of a bit out of the game within 20 minutes. You don't want that to happen. Like Parky said, even his prediction of 20 points to 8, I'd probably settle for that. A good performance in that game, we come away with our heads held high, then you can really chuck everything at Wigan then on the Thursday night. So yeah, we just don't want to get hammered in the game. But, you know, as I keep thinking to myself, I'm getting older now. I'm ever going to see us win it, St. Helens. 44 years is a long time. Surely your luck's got to change sometime. So we've had some real close games there. So let's just go there. We've got to defend like Trojans and work really hard and to stay in the game. So yeah, but I think yours is a bit ambitious, Rob, compared to Barkey's. But fingers crossed.
Yeah. So that's the end of this week's podcast, Paul. Another great show. Lots of great chat. Looking forward to weekend now.
Yeah, really enjoyed it, lads. It was great to see you both on Saturday. Really enjoyed it with Mark. So best wishes to Mark, and when he goes back to Australia, safe trip and whatever. And yeah, good to speak to you two guys again. Looking forward to Friday.
Yeah, and I want to say a big thanks to all the people who have donated via the Ko-fi, obviously helping us to fund the programmes, which helps us produce this podcast, and all the listeners who have listened to the various podcasts that we've put out this month. We've got record numbers this month, Parker. Unbelievable. Can't thank them enough. It's like you say, it's just three lads and a laptop talking Salford Red Devils for an hour and a half, sometimes every week, and everyone loves it and enjoys it and engages with us.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Daz in Cincinnati, we've got, yeah, you know, Mark in Wollongong when he goes home. You know, I know listeners all over the place, and it does amaze me, really, because you sent me something this week about Sol Valley, and it's bizarre. But I mean, yeah, like I've said a thousand times, it'd be pointless doing it if people weren't listening. So just delighted they do, and it does make it all worthwhile. And obviously the donations are just something above and beyond for me, sort of something I can't grasp. I really can't. But yeah, no, just thank everyone for listening and contribute. Obviously, send us tweets and whatever. Get in touch. It's obviously your pod as much as anybody else's. And if you're not listening and not contributing, you're just going to have to listen to us all the time. And nobody really wants that. So like you say, Daz there in Cincinnati sending his, you know, his ideas in and that kind of thing. Please get in touch. It gives us something to debate as well. We'll all have our own opinions, just like on the result of the match this week. We'll all have varying ideas, but that's what it's all about. So yeah, no, thanks everybody so much for listening. And again, thanks to Mark for his hospitality on Saturday.
Yeah, I can't wait, Paul, until the listener in Thailand who's on the boat up and down that canal contacts us. Like we say, listeners all over the world, we can't thank everyone enough for engaging with us, Paul. But yeah, it does blow your mind sometimes where people listen.
Yeah, they'll have to get us some invites to where they're listening. We'll go out and do a podcast over there with him, like a live one or something. It'd be great, that in Cincinnati or Thailand or somewhere like that. So no, but it does. It's great. And it's just fascinating to think people are listening to what we're talking about. And yeah, like Pac said, get in touch and we'll debate you all day long, won't we? It's great.
Yeah. So big thanks for joining us on this Devil in the Detail. I'm Rob Parkinson. You can find us on Facebook, Devil in the Detail SRD. You can find us on X at DITDSRD. And you can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify. Good luck, Reds. We'll see you on the other side.
Devil in the Detail.